latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Your ultimate weekly betting guide, published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more, all for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to the top of the hour, and about an hour and 20 minutes till the second session of Book 1 of the Keeneland Sale. And yesterday, things got underway, and a little slow pulling out of the station. That's not unusual until people fill in and, kind of get into the gallery and get settled. Always seems to take a little bit of time, no matter how big the sale is. But then the fur started to fly, and when it was all said and done, and the dust settled, the seven figure hips, which, considering that we've heard that session two and three are supposed to be more fruitful. If that's the case, Jessica, then yesterday spectacular. Yeah.
I should put on my running shoes for today. Is that what you're saying, Steve?
It was good thing
I got a good night's sleep.
I guess.
It's going to be a big day today.
Well, and talk about yesterday from your overall impression. I mean, there's already a hatful of stories.
Sure, yeah, I would agree with you. It seemed like the session started off slowly. There seemed like there were a bunch of RNAs, but it just kept picking up steam throughout the day. And I think by the end, it's hard to imagine that anyone at Keeneland was unhappy. Any Keeneland officials were unhappy with the results. We're looking at a buyback rate that was 29%, which is good. And the seven-figure transactions, the $7 million transactions that you mentioned. I think it was a great day at the sale.
Let's start with the and there's no reason for comparisons because the books aren't I think what there were four sessions for
the bigger book one session last year. Yeah, so it's a slightly smaller book this year, and so it makes the comparisons kind of difficult. But it was a good day just based on the numbers that they had this year.
I thought maybe one of the stories that had a heavy family tinge to it, with the Hinkles, and with the Al Maktoums, and the Banderoffs.
It's definitely a family that Sheikh Mohammed likes.
it was very notable from that standpoint. Talk about the Hinkles, because they it was their day.
Oh, they're such wonderfully nice people. It was such a great thing to see them have just an amazing day. They had two horses that they sent through the ring yesterday, and both bought seven figures, and they had that $2.5 million tap at the topper yesterday, who is a half, as you know, to Derby winner Nyquist. And this is a mare that they bought for not that much when Nyquist was a weanling. They bought this mare for $100,000 in 2013, and now she's had back-to-back million-dollar yearlings in the last 2 years, both of which were bought by Godolphin, by Sheikh Mohammed's Godolphin. So just a great story for the Hinkle family. They also had a curling colt sell for $1.05 million, and they bought that mare in with the curling colt in utero for just $370 in 2017. So just a great, remarkable day for the Hinkle family.
And absolutely. That one, and that, it's funny, that Curlin, since you bring it up, we still have to talk about the other one. The female family here, transportation, is that dam.
Mm-hmm.
And the second dam, Alternate, that produced Alternation, and As a result, it just so happens that the Pin Oak families have been all over the result sheets the last few weeks. You go back to the Pacific Classic. You've got Higher Power, who would be mm-hmm. what a brother of the
he's
dam. Is that right?
Alternation. Higher Power was produced by Alternate, who is also the dam of transportation.
There you go. There you go.
I made that as complicated as possible.
No, that's fine. There was another relation out of this family that won something in the last couple of weeks, because I kept coming every time I looked. One of the reasons I liked Higher Power in the Pacific Classic was the mile and a quarter, because of the relation to Alternation, and there was some hints there, but this family,
right.
This family shows up in the sales ring and gets a big score.
I think people are watching. They know what's going on in the racetrack. They have that information too when they're going to bid in the sales ring.
Talk about the Banderoffs, and the other Godolphin $2 million purchase was the Medaglia d'Oro colt, the HIP 138 out of Terra's Tango, and her first foal. There's quite a few prominent broodmares that are selling their first babies at this sale. And in fact, you wrote a piece, I think. Right? Did you write the piece?
Christy DiBernardis.
Christy did.
She went through the catalog and picked out all the mares who had, the big mares who had first foals this year. So it was very interesting to see that. And this one was one that she featured. And, great result for Stone Street as well. I mean, they're just having a great, they were big buyers yesterday. They bought a Medag Philly for $950 as well. So they did both sides of the sale yesterday.
Well, and the one we're talking about, the colt 138, $2,150,000. That was the big ticket item for Denali. But they also scored with a pair of Curlins, one colt, one filly, both $800,000. The filly goes to Sheikh Hamdan, to Shadwell, and Mike Ryan mm-hmm. bought the colt.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say about the year that Curlin's having in the sales ring? He dominated at Saratoga and again comes out strong here on the first day of the Keeneland September sale.
One way to get Larry Best to look at your consignment is to have an into mischief.
That seems to be a key thing. First thing he said after he signed the ticket on the one yesterday was, you know what, I came in here looking for into mischief. I have been impressed with the ones that I've bought and that I've running, like Instagram and Rowayton, and I wanted more. So he went back to into mischief, and he seems well-stocked on into mischief this year. The one out of Sealy Hills, of course, a half-brother to his Cambiar Park, who won the Del Mar Oaks a few weeks ago. So he spent $950,000 for that colt. And he bought another Into Mischief for $750,000. So he was busy with Into Mischief.
That was Hip 28, the 750. This was a tailor-made that is the family of Girolamo.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And also, we should say, it wasn't just Into Mischief for Larry yesterday. He also bought an American Pharoah filly. So he made three purchases yesterday.
Looking through some of the names, and I mentioned, you know, when I gave a top of the show, you know, kind of top line recap in anticipation of your visit, certainly the Japanese contingents were well represented and apparently are dotting the grounds. Talk about the couple of prominent purchases yesterday.
Sure. There's a Tappet colt, a foal to a champion Unique Bella, who is going to Japan after they purchased him for $1.5 million for a new owner, a relatively new owner in Japan, Yuji Hasekawa. This is his second purchase ever. He also bought a horse at the select sale in Japan over the summer. And the plan for this horse is they're going to send him to Japan and put him on that Japanese road to the Kentucky Derby that Master Fencer used this year to get to the Derby. So they're hoping he is successful there and they can bring him back to the Kentucky Derby in a couple of years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I also see Yoshizama Stable that bought a Tappet colt.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very international buying bench in general. I mean, the Japanese were there, but it seemed like there were people from all over the world shopping at Keeneland, and I think it really sets up for a strong sale when you have those international buyers here at the beginning pushing, and the domestic buyers, you know, they have to fight back, and they maybe get pushed into another book to keep the strength going throughout the market through the rest of the couple weeks that we're selling here at Keeneland.
One of the stories that certainly has emerged in the last basically 2 years, the incredible comeback to the industry, Jessica, of Peter Brandt. And under the White Birch farm name is the banner, which I think is what the polo, his polo moniker. He had planned apparently to come back and just dabble and have a couple of horses and when he
missed that mark then. He missed the dabbling mark. I'm concerned, I don't know.
Well, he apparently asked Chad Brown, you know, if I get back in the game, would you take? I only plan to have maybe three or four horses, and that went out the window right quick.
He bought four yesterday, so
exactly, and not to mention what's going on at Payson Park, where you know he's involved in the new what's going to be the new kind of reborn Payson Park. Talk about the purchases yesterday, a pair of colts by Pioneer the Nile, and then two fillies, a Kitten's Joy and a Flincher.
I thought it was interesting with the one Pioneer the Nile. He teamed up with Coolmore's MV Magnier. They spent $1 million for this colt by Pioneer the Nile. I think that's interesting because they, last year at this sale, bought Monarch of Egypt, who's by American Pharoah, the same partners, and that horse is now Group 1 placed in Ireland. So obviously they like what they see from that. They teamed up again and bought the half-brother yesterday. I thought that was kind of interesting. I always like it when I see the people, like, they buy a horse 1 year and then they come back and get more of the family next year. It's always a positive sign for the family, obviously, that they like what they're seeing.
Well, and he paid $160,000 for the Flincher filly, $360 for the Kitten's Joy, $775 for the Pioneer of the Nile out of Shook Up. That was a 4-star item. And this happens to be the second dam here is Sugar Shake, the lovely Sugar Shake. And I'm sure he's far from done. Also, I'm going to ask because I did see a note this morning, and I don't know if you've had a chance yet to follow if this has been made more widely discussed, and that apparently was that HIP 58, Jessica, the Warfront colt that has a name, Tour of Duty. This is the Warfront out of Sabbatical that had been in the foal patrol. And apparently it RNA'd, you know, coming out of the ring, but it apparently was purchased privately, and it's not showing up on the sales tab yet.
I'm not sure that Keeneland includes post-sales. I know that Phasic does, but I'm not sure that Keeneland does, so it might not actually show up.
Interesting, because
I
see that
there's a time limit that they would. I don't know, but I think that they do not include post sales at Keeneland.
That's interesting. As it happens, because Nicole Russo had made note that, you know, that this horse that had been, you know, part of the group that, you know, the Hall of Fame and the museum has made very popular during foaling season, and Daisy Phipps replied this morning that he was a private sale before he got back to the barn to White Birch for $700,000, and that the Phipps stable will retain 20%. So an interesting, there's an interesting development.
You've given me something to follow today.
There you go.
And also Peter Brandt not dabbling. I think we're establishing a lot of things here.
The dabble is
off the rock.
Exactly, it's become one of those rock dives now. It's not a toe in the water at this point.
No.
It's like an Acapulco cliff dive. Well, that's a story because the fact that the Phippses are staying in is interesting, and of course the Phipps offerings that were being advertised coming into the sale made quite a splash, and to the point where Daisy responded publicly to inquiries about whether they were, you know, somehow, you know, pulling back or even leaving the business. But she said categorically no. You know, kind of a post-Dinny kind of reshaping of the stable.
I think they've been doing that over the last few years, sort of like trying to find a more manageable number and finding different ways of, you know, I know that they bought a few yearlings in the past few years as well, which is a new
yes.
thing as they restructure a bit, I think.
Well, and what else? What else did you write about that you thought was either a success, maybe a weanling to yearling sale, or, you know, what other stories caught your eye yesterday?
I think it's a big thing that Sheikh Mohammed is back in attendance at the sale. He was gone for about 10 years. He didn't attend the sales personally, but came back last year, and Godolphin was far and away the leading buyer last year, and he's back again this year, and you saw immediate impact on Monday with the $2 million purchases of Godolphin. So I think they're another one to watch the rest of the week here. I think they'll be a major presence, obviously. Shadwell traditionally is a big buyer, and they were active yesterday as well. They were the second leading buyer yesterday. So I think you're going to see the same kind of people at the top, and hopefully it continues on.
What do we like today? Give us a couple of hips that you're watching, and you expect, as you said, that this should be a big day. And again, a number of big mares and a lot of big siblings go through today.
There are a lot of big name pedigrees coming up, as you said. I think it's interesting that Bridlewood and Don Alberto partnered up to buy a few high-priced mares in the last few years, and two of those have yearlings going through today. There's a Hip 247, who is a full brother to Constitution. Don Alberto and Bridlewood teamed up to buy his dam, Baffled, for $3.5 million. And they also are selling the first foal out of Kentucky Oaks winner Catherine Sophia, a filly by Pioneer the Nile, who's Hip 301. So those are two to watch out for those two big groups. There's also a Tappet filly out of Champion Day at the Spa that Eaton is consigning for Stone Street. And Don Alberto also has the first foal out of Grade 1 winner Angela Renee, who is by Empire Maker. It's a colt by Empire Maker. Denali has a half to Tappet. And Airdrie has a Warfront colt out of Oaks winner Believe You Can. So those are some of the highlights probably on the pedigree front today.
Absolutely. And the other big storyline that we tend to follow is first crop successes, and saw that the Run Happy yearlings yesterday, four of them sold nicely, for instance.
Yeah, it's a shame they can't get a better marketing campaign going for Run Happy.
Yeah,
I feel
exactly.
Like they need to advertise them a little bit more.
Well, and, you know, the individuals still have to go out and perform, you know, for the buyers. They still have to look good. But just the fact that, you know, I think there's only one today, you know, but, you know, part of it is they've got to make the catalog, right? I mean, the catalog, these horses are evaluated, these yearlings. It just isn't a question of, you know, you put your name in, and you're going to get into the, you know, into book one. There's one today, and then there's four tomorrow. But talk about some of the other first croppers: California Chrome, obviously. Who else are we watching?
Nyquist had Nyquist. A pre-sale yesterday for 360 was his average, so he was second behind Run Happy, and Frosted also had three sell, and he averaged about 253,000. So those were the top young sires yesterday.
Well, and let's see, since that came up,
looks like California Chrome only had two fillies still yesterday. So
two yesterday.
Still early days for him.
Nyquist has got three today, and let's see about California Chrome, because California Chrome does not have any. Oh, that's actually, I take that back. Today, I'm looking at session three. Session two today, let's go back one, and let's take a look at Nyquist. Nyquist has one today. Frosted, you have to actually spell out more than FRO because Warfront comes up. there's six Frosteds today, and two California Chromes.
So we'll definitely
one.
Get a better idea for the Frosteds.
You know, one Chrome is out. Hip 331 came out that Van Meter Gentry had. So the TaylorMade sells Hip 203. So fairly early today in the first dozen or so will go through today. And, you know, plenty of other firepower. Curlin looks like he's got a big day today with over a dozen, and all the big names. And that's it's always interesting because of the way the randomness of the alphabetized system of the mares. It's the way they're going to spill out from once they pick that lead letter.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out. Sometimes you get bunches of good horses, and then there's a ball, but it's all random, just alphabetically.
Well, use your alphabet to spell out TDN, Thoroughbred Daily News, and the team of coverage, Brian D. Donato. Brian will be with us on Thursday, and Jessica and Christine. Who else is tromping the grounds?
Wait, just the three of us here in Kentucky, and we've got Alan Carasso back at the office, so he's helping us out too.
Alan is only allowed out of the office once a year to go to Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, that's where we send him.
Exactly. He's got Colt's neck. And he goes, yeah, he goes from Brielle to Hong Kong and back.
Hong Kong.
And that's it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That makes sense, right?
Jess, I appreciate it. And, of course, you should be following all of the terrific correspondents for the TDN. And Jessica Martini does a tremendous job, one of our favorite visits at any sales season. So tie on with
Thanks,
Jessica.
Steve. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Jessica Martini at TDN. Let's take a top of the hour break. We've got a visit from John White coming, as well as the father-daughter team. And nope, not the Gunthers. We've had the Gunthers before, but this is the Todds, Glenn Todd and Shelley Todd, who absolutely dominated at Hastings over the weekend. John White joins us next, and then we'll get Glenn and Shelley on back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sum on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 5 minutes into hour three. And it's the John White theme. Tiger Rag. Good morning, John White.
Good morning, Steve Beck. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Kind of an eclectic morning. We're hitting a bunch of different things, and want to catch up with you before we're joined. Do you know the Todds up in at all? Do you know of their exploits up in Western Canada?
No, they're exploits. I don't know them, but certainly, as you say, they had a lot to celebrate from last weekend. And I especially appreciated the fact that Mario Gutierrez won that BC Derby, the big race for the three-year-olds, on five-star general, the Distorted Humor Colt. And that's a big race. It has been for many, many years up there in that part of the I can't say our country, but in that part of Canada. In fact, they had a lot of horses come in from Century Downs for that BC Derby this year. But Mario Gutierrez was a real successful rider on that particular oval. I always enjoyed going up there to what was Exhibition Park back in the 1970s when I was working at Longacres for the racing form. And in fact, the very first day I ever went up to Exhibition Park, which is now Hastings Racecourse, I decided they would race Monday nights, and Longacres raced Wednesday through Sunday. And so what do you do when you have a day off? Well, I decided, you know what, I think I'll drive up there from Seattle to Vancouver, B.C. I'd never been out of the country at that time. Crossed the border nicely and got up to, and it was, I only had one of those little, unlike today where we've got these phones that can guide you all over the world, and thank goodness for those. I tell you how wonderful those are to have when you travel across the country or wherever you're going these days. But all I had was one of those like Rand McNally deals that had a little teeny about 4-inch by 4-inch map of Vancouver, B.C., but they had the track on there, Exhibition Park. So I'm driving through the city, and I got into the vicinity of Exhibition Park, and I was having trouble finding it. And so I'm kind of driving around the area and finally saw some stables and thought, well, I must be at the track now. So I pull up, and I was planning to, post time was supposed to be like 6:30, and I was, you know, realizing I could get lost, or, you know, I wanted to get there with plenty of time. And I drive into this parking lot, and the parking lot is practically full at 4:30, and I'm thinking, boy, that's an awfully big crowd here 2 hours before the first post. This is a little weird. So I open my door, and I can hear a call of a race, and I'm thinking, well, what the heck is going on if they're running a race 2 hours before they're supposed to be running a race? So that was rather quizzical. So I walk up and find the entrance to the track, and just before I get to the entrance, this kid comes running up to me, and he goes, hey, do you want to buy a program for half price? And I thought, boy, what do they spot these United States guys? Am I that easy to spot that the guys? I said, for what day? I thought the kid was maybe trying to sell me a program for a different day or something. And he says, for today, here, take a look. And I said, well, okay. So I bought the kid's program. Then I went up to buy a racing form, and they were out. I said, well, what kind of a deal is going on here? So I go walk into the track, and I look on the tote board, and it's the seventh race. And I thought, well, they're supposed to start at 6:30. How can it be the seventh race? I look through the program, and the features of the Victoria Day Handicap. So it's a holiday in Canada, and instead of a Monday night card, it was an afternoon card. So I had driven 2.5-3 hours up from Seattle. So the first thing I did was look at how many races they had on the card. I'm thinking, God, I hope they don't only have 8 races. And I drove all the way up here for like 2 races, and they did have 4. It was a 10-race card, so I had the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. But I have no racing form, so I'm thinking, well, what do you do? So the first race I went up to bet was this horse that just off the pedigree. I thought, well, you know, this horse looks pretty well bred. I recognize this pedigree. And the horse just won by like 5. And I thought, well, maybe I don't need a racing form after all. So then for the next race, there was this guy, I saw a racing form on the floor, and I thought, oh, this is good. Maybe I can, you know, pick that up. And there was this guy that was rather intoxicated. He was standing on the form, And I'm thinking, God, if this guy could just lift his foot a little bit, I could grab this form. And finally, the guy kind of got tipsy, and he tipped enough for me to snatch up this form. And I said, sir, is this your racing form? And he said, no, and he walked off. And I went, oh, man, this is great. At least now I got a racing form. And so then the next race, I saw this horse that had fell the time before, but he was like 8-5 in the race that he fell. And I made sure I went to the paddock where they have a statue of George Royal, who of course was John Longdon's final ride of his storied career when he won the San Juan Capistrano at Santa Anita. But this was a very famous horse, Canadian bred George Royal. And so I go to the paddock to kind of look at this horse since he fell last time to see if he looks in good shape. And he went on the post parade. I liked the way he was acting on the post parade. Horse was like 4-1. And I thought, well, gee, if this horse was bet so much first time out, you know, he had to have good works and everything. So I went up and bet him, and he won by about 5. And I thought, wow, this is actually working out to be quite a good day. And so I lost the next two races, but I ended up showing a profit for the day. But that was sure a wacky day for that whole trip. My other trip to Exhibition Park that I think your listeners would appreciate, like this would have been, around 1977, 1978. And I drove up there again on a Monday. Obviously, from then on, I made sure that they were actually starting at 6:30 instead of 2 o'clock or something. I never made that mistake again. I always made sure of what day Victoria Day was for the rest of my life. So I drive up for a Monday card. They had a stakes race that night, and a filly from Longacres was in the race, and her name was Silky Steele. Her father had won the 1968 Longacres Mile on a wet track, and he was a really good horse, and he was a tremendous wet track horse. Back then, we called them mutters. And this was a daughter of him, and I actually assigned later a superior mud mark, the X with inside a circle, for Silky Steele. She was a phenomenal wet track performer. And Mike James, who was the leading rider at Longacres, went up to Exhibition Park to ride her in this stake. And so you always had to exchange your money, the American into the Canadian money. So I exchanged my money, and I lost a couple of races. So I'm thinking, you know what? And it started to rain. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to just stop betting, and I'm going to bet everything I got left on Silky Steele in the future, since it looks like it's going to be a wet track. So I did, and she went off at like 4-1. And she just aired that night. And so I ended up having a really good night and made money. And so I get back to the border, and I'm sure it's not like that these days, but it was pretty easy going back between Canada and the United States back then in the late 70s. And I get to the border, and there were only like 6 cars in line. And I get up to the guy, and he says, I roll down my window, and he says, what is your place of residence? And I said, Renton, Washington. And he says, what was your business in Canada? And I said, horse races. He says, well, how'd you do? I said, well, you know, I was down early in the card, but it started to rain, and Silky Steele was in the feature. And he goes, oh, my God, Silky Steele is in the feature tonight, and I had to work? And I said, yeah. And he goes, who rode her? And I said, Mike James. Mike James went up to ride her? Oh, don't. Oh, I take it she won. I said, oh, yeah, she went wire to wire. She won by 4 or 5. What'd she pay? I said, $4. 4-1. I said, 4-1, the guy says. So I'm looking in my mirror, and the traffic is starting to stack up behind me at the border to get back into the United States, because this guy wants to talk horses with me coming back into the United States.
That's great.
So finally he says, well, go on through. And I said, thank you, sir, and drove right on back to Renton, you know. But that was quite a... I can tell you, I've never talked horses at the United States border before like that.
That's great. I've gone a few times when I was working in Canada and would go to Vancouver for typically, you know, maybe twice a year on business, and we'd get over to exhibition as well. And it was modest at that time, and then it, you know, before it was rechristened and reborn as Hastings, the history of all those Western Canada tracks is interesting. They've kind of changed over the years, and the situation with Century seems very healthy. We had Owen Hardy a couple of weeks ago when he had run up there and got taken down, but he raved about Century and the people and how well they were treated and how enthusiastic they were. I mean, it's the West. I suppose you could put it to, I mean, Hastings is in Vancouver proper, but the two Century properties, I mean, that might as well be Oklahoma. I mean, that's essentially what it is for Canada, and they've got a real culture of the horse, and you mentioned Logden. I mean, there's a great history and a long history. But we're going to talk after you and I finish. We're going to talk to Shelley and to her father, Glenn Todd. I'd seen the name, but this was an amazing for them to win the Oaks, the Derby, and they also won the Randall Plate. And I think only one of the horses was favored. It wasn't as if, Mac Robertson had a day at Canterbury a couple of weeks ago. Maybe like a month ago, during the summer, and Mac won, I think he won five of the Minnesota stakes, but he was favored in every race at a short price, basically. Here they were not, I think, the only one favorite in those three. So,
speaking of favorites, one other trip I took to Exhibition Park in the 70s was 1978, and it was opening night in April. And again, I made sure that it actually was night, not day. And myself and my call taker, who took down my call at Long Acres, Mike Flieger, who ended up being the general manager of the Seattle office of the Racing Form, and I had hired the guy for the Racing Form out of a bowling alley where he worked in Spokane. But he was a big racing fan. That's why I hired him. He was so knowledgeable about racing. And he ended up replacing me as the chart caller when I started moving all over the country, working my way up for the Racing Form to end up eventually in Southern California. But he and I drove up there to Exhibition Park on a Monday night, their opening night, and Steve Coffin, they had brought Steve Coffin in to ride in 1978. Again, this is April, and keep in mind that the first Saturday in May, Coffin would win the Kentucky Derby on Affirmed and, of course, sweep the Triple Crown with Affirmed. So this was just before that Triple Crown, but Coffin Mania was huge, and they had a tremendous crowd that night, and Coffin didn't just come in to ride one race. He rode like five, six, seven races that night, and you talk about favorites, this was great, because you talk about overbet horses, and I was cleaning up betting horses that a lot of them were ridden by Kenny Skinner, who was the leading rider at Exhibition Park at that time, and he was riding horses that probably should have been favored, but because everybody was piling on these Coffin horses, I was getting, a much better price on those horses, and Coffin only won one race that night, so that was a very memorable night, because this was one of those, I was thinking, boy, I wish this happened all the time in racing, where you could get these inflated prices on horses just because a big name rider was riding these other horses.
There's an analogy to that, and it came up in our coverage of the Hong Kong racing, and it was at the time when we first were getting into the Hong Kong conversations, and Paul Matisse talked about how when they run a dirt card at Hong Kong, and this is in the middle of Joe Marrero's just domination. That has been kind of I won't say quashed, but it certainly has tempered with Zach Purton emerging in Hong Kong. But when Marrero was just winning everything, they would run. They have those handful of dirt-only cards that they run. I think four times a year they run the dirt cards. And everybody would still be betting Marrero, except that he wasn't as effective riding on the dirt. And so Paul pointed out that that same phenomena where, you know, everybody was piled on to, you know, one jock because of the over, you know, the overriding dominance of the rider on the circuit in general. But when they ran the dirt races, he just wasn't as effective. And so you had these totes that were inflated because of it. Same thing.
I'll tell you one thing. You mentioned Matisse. Those Matisses, among my favorites to listen to on your show. I mean, you talk about knowledgeable, sharp people in this game. And I just listen very, very carefully whenever they're on. I mean, just tremendous knowledge in this game and a real feel for this sport and for the gambling aspects of it and so forth. So, and you had another one of my favorites on yesterday, Charlie Lopresti. It was nice to hear him. You know, you think back to that job he did with Wise Dan, and I mean, you know, it's just that, you know, it's kind of almost being forgotten now. Just what a fabulous job Charlie did with that horse, and what a fabulous horse that was.
Yeah, no doubt. And we tried to point that out, Charlie hasn't forgotten how to train. It just needs the stock. That's the case with everybody. Let's talk, John, a couple of notes before we bring in Glenn and Shelley Todd. Let me get a couple of reactions to the opening weekend at Los Al. And we haven't really referenced it yet, but I did bring up the maiden race from Friday, Mohawk, the winner. And visually, it looked okay. It didn't come back a fast race, really. So we'll see what happens next. The sibling of Noldy ran a good second for John Sadler, and then we went into the stakes action. I'm just reaching. There we go. Here's my Los Al stuff. Moon Mischief. Three lengths behind Mohawk in that maiden race. And then Saturday we had the Beverly Lewis and the E.B. Johnston for the Calbred, three and ups. But Baffert with Fleur de Mar ends up going off second choice.
Well, Fleur de Mar was very interesting because this Tisnell filly was very hyped. Going into her debut back in January, she was 1-5 in that race and won like she could be something to really make a splash in the three-year-old filly ranks this year. But this is where, you know, you and Andy were talking a little bit about buyer's speed figures earlier. And look, I've knocked the buyers from time to time just when I may have a disagreement with them for this or that. But I'm going to tell you, they're such a helpful tool. They really are. And this is a great example of that, Fleur de Mar, because considering the hype associated with her, that really resonated with me when she got only a 78 buyer in her debut. And again, to show you the hype, most fillies that would debut and only get a 78 like that wouldn't have been pounded the odds on favoritism in her next start, which she was. And she ran a disappointing race that day in the slop, but it was in the slop, so you think, okay, that was in the slop. She ran a decent second in the Santa Anita Oaks. I mean, Bellafina cleaned her clock that day, but at least she finished second in the Grade 1 race. And Bamford did think enough of her to send her to the Kentucky Oaks, but, I mean, she was no factor there. And back in Southern California in a short field in the summertime Oaks, she kind of thought, well, this is a really good spot for her because that was not a strong addition to the summertime Oaks. And she really came kind of apart in that one and went on the shelf after that. So she comes back, and, you know, her work tab into this comeback race was very good. So I thought she could really return to form in this race, and that she did return to form. She was off the pace, actually last for a part of the race, and came on down the middle of the track under Mike Smith. I thought that was interesting. Smith was riding her, too, because he'd only ridden her the one time before in the Summertime Oaks when she got beat a mile. And I was really thinking, well, if this is the hyped filly that, you know, we were led to believe, maybe she's going to get a pretty decent buyer in this race, and she got an 82. So that wasn't that far from the 78 in the debut. So it makes me, at this point, conclude that this is a nice filly, but she's nowhere near the filly that she was kind of hyped to be. And I draw that conclusion at this point based off the buyers, because the buyers often are a good indication of this. Now, you don't want to always go with that, because I've seen a lot of really nice horses debut with a soft figure, and then, you know, as they get more experience, they'll take that buyer and really build on that and improve quickly. That all over the country I've seen that. So you don't want to, just because she gets a 78 in the debut, you don't want to say, oh, well, this is a filly that isn't going to be much. And especially when she's a filly that's got a nice pedigree, tis now out of a pulpit mare and in the hands of a great trainer like Bob Baffert. But this, you know, one reason I've kept an eye on her is because she's a Godolphin, and you know Baffert wants to produce for Godolphin, just like I was keeping an eye on the Jedmon horses that were with Bob early on, because you know Bob really wants to produce and try to become like the Bobby Frankel on the West Coast for Jedmont. And that's one reason I got high on Arrogate a little ahead of the curve before a lot of people did, and one reason I bet Arrogate in the Travers and got a really nice price on him in the Travers is because I was kind of projecting that maybe this was going to be a star for Baffert in terms of him having a star for Jedmont. So a lot of times maybe you can draw these parallels between the ownership and the trainer and kind of build on that as a better and try to ride the coattails of that. But again, Mohawk, he was very hyped before his debut, and he's hyped this summer, and his debut got delayed a little bit, and so then he got back on the work tab at Del Mar and had a good string of works coming into this race at Los Al, and when he won and won drawing away, I thought, wow, well, you know, this is the Mohawk that was being hyped. Well, here again, the fact that he got a rather soft buyer is something to take into consideration when trying to measure him up against maybe the likes of an Eight Rings, and who was in the 90s in his debut, got a 94 at Del Mar, and you'd have to think would have won the Del Mar Futurity most likely, if not for taking that left turn in the chute and then seeding the rider. So Mohawk can build off of this race. He's an Uncle Mo out of any given Saturday mare, an expensive yearling purchase. But, you know, I've really enjoyed your coverage, as always, not only of racing, but of the sales. You know, you do such a good job getting Nicole Russo and Jessica Martini. In fact, I've never had a martini in my life, so these are the only martinis I've ever had are these Jessica Martinis. And, you know, it really keeps us up. And the fact that Godolphin was such a big player already at Keeneland, I'm wondering who's going to be getting these horses. And I have to think that I'll be surprised if Bob Baffert doesn't at least get somebody out of this these purchases.
Yeah, he's been getting his share, and they spread them around. You know, Kieran, of course, and Kieran gets some Shadwells, and right now. I mentioned Owen Hardy. Owen has been, has been getting some nice ones. So nice win for, as we mentioned, for Florida Mar, and then when it came to the Calbred, Oliver, the Papa Clem. For William Peoples, and this was Doug O'Neill, and they take the E.B. Johnston. We still have the Los Al special yet to run, and all the turf horses in Southern California, they're going to get themselves a little three-week break and get ready for Santa Anita. And, John, you're getting ready for Santa Anita, of course, as well. We'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds great, Steve, and I certainly look forward to listening to the Tides, and I congratulate them on, as well, on such a huge day there at Hastings Racecourse in a city that I think is a lovely city. It's one of my absolute favorite cities in the entire world, Vancouver, British Columbia, a beautiful, beautiful city.
That's a great that's a great town, no doubt, and a little gas town to visit. I haven't been there in years, but when I was in Montreal, I spent plenty of time. We'd come out west to Vancouver. We used to go to a mammoth Chinese restaurant called Pink Pearl. That's where we'd always have these big group dinners. They have the table, the big round table with the Lazy Susan, and you spin the Lazy Susan around.
We got one like that near Santa Anita that a lot of Santa Anita patrons visit, called the Panda Inn. And I've had a number of dinners there with that kind of setup, it's fun.
With a group. John, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care.
John White, everybody, post time. John, I think we'll stay here because we've got the Todd standing by, and I was immediately taken when I took a gander at what went on at Hastings, and I had posted the fields at my website, and it's not unusual to see Glenn Todd have a number of starters in races like this, the North American Thoroughbred Horse Company that they operate under, but to sweep the British Columbia Derby, I think the second time you've won the BC Derby, Glenn, and the Oaks, as well as an undercard race, that's a pretty special day at the racetrack. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Glenn, I think I know we're reaching for Shelley too, and so we'll get Shelley in as well. But first, talk about what's gone on with your operation, because for years I used to see you as an owner, and then you started to put them in your name. I mean, talk about the evolution of your game, of your interest in the game.
Well, I've been in the racing business for nearly 50 years, but my good friend and fellow trainer, Troy Taylor, who trained for me for a number of years, retired. So I was left with no trainer, but I did train horses on my own back in the 70s. So I had to get a trainer's license and start training my own horses again. So that's what happened.
I get it. And you guys have camped. Taylor had a long career. How many years did he train?
Oh, 70.
Yeah, I was going to say, it had to be a crazy number.
Yeah, he's 89 tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh.
70, yeah. And he retired in 2016, and, well, I had a good teacher. He's a good horseman, Taylor, and so I took over my own training.
Well, certainly a day like Saturday. Whether you're an owner, a breeder, or In your case, doing the training and the ownership, it's just one of those days you can't really envision winning all three of those stakes in one day.
Nobody's ever won the stakes in the Derby in one day before, so it was racing history in British Columbia, and a day that my family and I'll never forget.
Hi, Dad.
there's Shelley. There's Shelley Todd joining us as well. And we'll talk to Shelley about the breeding side of the operation. But, Glenn, let's talk about the winners for first and foremost. And start with the Oaks, because she was the longest price. You had an 11-1 in here, Amazonian, and she came from a long way back.
Yeah, Steve, the track was she never went off the board. But it was a pretty competitive race. It was a 100-grander, and there was people who shipped in from Washington and Alberta. And it was a pretty stacked race. If they hadn't come, she would have probably been 3-1. But there were some pretty good horses shipped in. And she wound up at 11-1. But she only wondered what I was doing most of the day. I was watching. The track was playing really funny. I don't know what they did to it, but it was really deep, and it was really heavy, and the rail seemed heavy, and we had two horses in the race, and I called an audible at the last minute of the paddock because I talked to to Mario Gutierrez and Richard Hamill earlier in the day and said that we both take a jockey position here because there's quite a bit of speed. But you either had to be on the lead or you had to come from far back. So I said, one of you got to go, and one of you got to go back to last and make a run. So Mario volunteered right away to go to the lead, and Richard said, then I'll take back. And Amazonian was about 12, 15 back even at the quarter pole and just lit fire and blew by them. But it was more on the way the track was playing than the horse getting back that far.
Interesting. And you mentioned Gutierrez, who was on Northern Gray Star, and
right.
Both of these are under your operation. And it's interesting. Amazonian, you bought at Keeneland, and the other Northern Gray Star came in the BC sale, which I think is today.
It is today, correct? Shelby, that's where Shelby is right now. We're selling and buying at the BC sale today, so she's got him in the sale.
Well, you're the Stone Street. You're Shelley. You're the Barbara Banky Western Canada.
Well, hey, I'm very new at the business. I'm learning as I go. That is for sure. Lots to learn.
Well, we'll talk about the sale and we'll talk about the bloodstock side. But explain, Glenn, if you would, North American Thoroughbred Horse Company, because you've created the kind of a partnership operation. You're bringing people in.
No, North American Thoroughbred, the horses that run in that name are all mine.
Okay.
We have 100 and some odd horses.
Wow.
That I own here and scattered around the country. We have horses in Washington, Kentucky. But we had some syndicates to try to help the business, but it just got too much, so we haven't been in the syndicate business for a while.
Okay, so you pulled out. So you're not doing any
partnership at the moment. No,
okay.
No. We had some large groups, but it was a lot of work. So I gave the people to other people.
Okay. Well, let's turn our attention from the Oaks winner. Let's talk about the Derby winner, and you went off at second choice here, 5-star General, and you got a. In this case, you took advantage of the front end, and Mario Gutierrez aboard for you here.
Yeah, Mario, the horse, we only bought him in July out of the Facet Tipton Horses of Racing Aid sale from Windstar, actually. Windstar had the horse, and we bought him for $180,000 at the Facet Tipton July sale. And we ran him once here, and he won the Derby trial, and we ran him back in the Derby. And Mario, I don't know if you're aware of it, but I sort of raised that kid, and I got him started. Mario probably has won 400 races for me over the years, and I sent him off to California, and he was mad at me, but he always comes back when I call on him to ride in the big race. So we were talking earlier, and I told him we bought a pretty good horse for the Derby, and he said that I'm coming to ride him, and Mario showed up to ride him.
How
and
about
rode
that?
A great race. I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't have won the race without Mario. It was a race of the century from the quarter pole in, and the two horses went toe-to-toe. Our horse was in front by a head from the quarter pole home, and neither horse gave up one inch, and we held on by a lip. Without Mario, we wouldn't have won.
And that's your second Derby, right? You won a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we won 2016. So that was our second Derby. It was our second Oaks as well. We won it with Evelyn's Dancer in 2012. As a matter of fact, Shelley's got a horse in the sale today out of Evelyn's Dancer by the factory.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Well, the Oaks and Derby sweep. And then for good measure, you turn around and you win with He's the Reason. Here's a factor, Gelding, the four-year-old, wins the Randall's Plate. And I tell you, he ran a big fig, Glenn.
Yeah, he did. He ran super. He was on the engine the whole way. And Hamill rode him. And Mary wanted to ride him, but he couldn't take Hamill off to win.
No.
So Hamill got out on the front end, and He was never touched. So that made it three in a row.
Three in actually, a row?
Mario rode a horse for us in the next race, and he stumbled coming out of the gate and ran second. Mario said if he doesn't stumble, he'd have won. It'd have been four in a row, but we'll take the three in a row because they were all staked.
Well, exactly. That was the nightcap. That was just a claimer, but Seeking Bull.
Because I got the chart sitting here. Right. Stumble coming out of the gate.
Well, isn't this funny, Shelley? I refer to you as Barbara Banky, and as it happens, he's the reason is a Stone Street bred.
He is a Stone Street bred. Yes. No, like I said, years ago, my father had said to me, "Hey, do you want to start to learn a bit more of this horse racing?" And I said, "Sure." So I've been traveling with my dad and my uncle for 8 years, doing the sales and learning about horses. And then I went to Kentucky a few years ago, and my dad has a few mares down there, and I went to a farm to learn actually from very beginning to the very end of foaling and being with mares and babies and handling them, and got a little addicted, and I haven't left. So, yeah, that's the part that I really enjoy learning about is the mares and babies, and, of course, doing all the sales stuff with dad.
Well, and that's, Glenn, that for you, that it's got to be nice to have, to have her take an interest and then to, take that part of the responsibilities on.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm third generation, and she'll be fourth generation.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Now he's got my son interested, too. Good Lord.
That's great.
Where
do you keep your mares?
We keep them at a farm in Kentucky. Mm-hmm.
Right
down in Lexington. So we're actually doing a little bit of our own operation there.
That's interesting. Glenn, how has that evolved for you? Given the size of your operation?
Well, we've got all our mares there. But we're going to probably start upgrading here because Shelley's taking such a big interest and probably start to buy and sell in Kentucky. She's leaving tomorrow for Kentucky and I'm leaving Thursday, so we'll be at Keeneland next week. Well, Friday, actually, so...
So you're going to jump in at book two, basically.
We're going to try. Correct. Yeah. Try to upgrade. We've bought a lot of horses at Keeneland, actually. Well, Amazonian, and he's the reason both came out of the Keeneland sale.
Glenn, give everybody a snapshot of what's going on the Western Canada side of things. I've only mentioned, the two new tracks, the Century, both the Century Downs and the Century Mile. It really feels like the trade in the industry is pretty healthy in Western Canada right now.
Yeah, we're all holding on pretty good, but the whole West Coast we're all lacking horses, the whole West Side, right? California, Washington, D.C., we're all lacking horses, but we're holding in there. We haven't gone down, but we're not going up very much. But things are okay here. They're okay.
How does that change? How does the market condition, and you mentioned, trying to upgrade a little bit, is that in all areas? I mean, in terms of, trying to race more stateside and trying to acquire some more mares and quality mares?
Yeah, probably more mares, but I'll always support the local guys first, right? But we want to move off, and California's our goal, or Keeneland, like Lexington.
Sure.
Keeneland. So we'll try to get better. How's that?
Okay. you seem to be doing okay. I did notice that you're standing a stallion, and the minute I saw his name, I smiled because I remembered when Bob McNair, when Stonerside, when he was campaigned in the U.S. Texas Wildcatter. So are you interested in?
I bought him off Stone Street. Fletcher had him. He ran second in the Gotham, and I bought him right after that race, and raced him, and he got an injury, and unfortunately, four or five, so I had to retire him. But he was good to me, and we should have won the Canadian Derby, and we should have won the D.C. Derby, actually. But we got in traffic trouble twice, but it happened. And so I stood him because, and actually he's a pretty good sire. We've mostly bred him to our own mares, and we're starting to get some outside ones, but I've never really marketed the horse, but he hasn't done that bad. They run.
He has good numbers on the track, for sure.
Yeah.
He was Monarcos.
Usually high. Pardon me?
He was a Monarcos, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when he lost the Visionaire. In the Gotham. I remember that.
He got the nose in the Gotham, I think.
Yep. He sure did.
Yeah.
He sure did.
Yeah.
I was always partial to Stoner Side horses, Congaree, probably starting around Congaree. I just had a, I don't know if it was the white jacket and with the green chevron, or I don't know. I was always a fan of Stoner Side. And so when I saw Texas Wildcatter that you had him, I got a big kick out of it.
I
love it.
I had him since he was three. I've got to leave, but I can leave Shelby on the
All later. Right.
I'm actually in the dentist chair at the moment.
I love it.
And I'm holding up the dentist. So
okay.
Go ahead.
But thank you very much. I'll leave Shelby on. Shelby, I'll see you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.
So funny. Glenn Todd. And,
he's going to love that. Live on air. He's
the dentist.
Chair. Yeah.
Shelley, I was gonna, I was gonna ask. Turn down the radio if you would, if you could.
Yes. Pardon me?
Is the radio on in the background?
No.
Okay, I'm getting an echo. It must be from the connection. It's from the connection. Then that happens.
Okay.
The family, your dad mentioned third generation already. What's the background? Talk about your grandfather and great-grandfather. What's the backgrounds in the game?
They all raced. I mean, at Hastings Park, I think Hastings Park's been around for 100-some-odd years, and they were kind of people who started it. And my grandfather had a lot of horses. I remember growing up there, basically in the backstretch, like most of us do, but we don't. And then my dad took over the business, after I finished raising my son, I'm starting to get into it too. So it's just been a long, they love it. They love the horses. They love the thoroughbreds, and they love horse racing. It's something that, they all take great passion in.
That's tremendous. I know the history of Exhibition Park. It goes back, a long time. In fact, John White and I, John's from the Pacific Northwest, from Washington, and he talked about his trips. And when I was living in Montreal in the 90s, whenever I would go to Vancouver, I would get over to Exhibition as well. And I knew that it had a long history, and obviously your family is
part of that.
A big part of it.
Beautiful setting, an amazing racetrack. It's just right in the mountains. It's beautiful. It's awesome, right? And we get a lot of local support. We get great crowds on the weekends, and people forget that we have great athletes right live on the field that you can actually be with and feel the run, and it's exciting. People love it in Vancouver, and they certainly love it when Mario comes up.
That was an interesting sidebar too, because the Gutierrez story. At the time.
Mario came from actually. He lived in Santa Cruz, Mexico, and our family and Terry Jordan's family brought him up, and he never raced. And he started on our horses in Vancouver. And I think it was like 8 years after he was in Vancouver, he got a shot to go to Ride I'll Have Another, and the rest is history. Every weekend he'd try to drive home, and my dad would kick him out the door, get back to Santa Anita. You've got to make your way there, and he certainly has. He's done amazing.
The tie-in to all this is, of course, the Pewich family, which also yeah, right, is
totally,
is also yeah, connected.
Totally. Mike and his uncle, oh, they're totally connected. And my dad's really good friends with Mark Domenico and Mike up here, too, and Mike's uncle who passed away, unfortunately. But, yeah, they're all tied into this, too.
Well, it was Ivan, right? It was Ivan
it
that
was
brought,
Ivan who was,
that brought
yeah,
Mario
was
down.
The agent. Yeah, who was his agent, yes. Yes, so, yeah, it's yeah, incredible journey for Mario. He's been awesome.
I've told this story a number of times on Friday, on Oaks Day of that year. Tina and I were going up to the press box, and Mario was in the elevator with us.
Oh, yeah.
And he looked like a deer in the headlights. I said to Tina after we got off the elevator, I said, that's the kid on Nyquist. I said, he looked like he was 12 years old, and
yeah,
it seemed like it was an overwhelming scenario, and yet he went out and just and rode a brilliant race to catch Bodemeister, and I kicked myself. I remember I let that impression seep into my decision making on Saturday. I thought, how's this kid? How's he gonna possibly, coming into this kind of a glare? Mm-hmm. How is he gonna possibly deal with it? And now he's a two time Derby winner.
Yeah, and you know what? Courses like they just relax for him. Like it's weird. He doesn't. When he gets to the racetrack, he doesn't let any of that bother him. It's really weird, but he gets on those horses and he gets them to relax really well, and he goes for it. I mean, he's an awesome jockey. Awesome. And, I call him my brother, so he's more than
that's
that
real
to me. But, just an awesome dad, husband, brother, son. Oh, he's got it all. He's been doing really well.
That's tremendous. For you, as getting as involved and after, mm-hmm, what sounds like, first being exposed and then a real apprenticeship, staying close to, to your father and you mentioned your uncle. What part of it has been the toughest for you to get a hold of? What part of understanding the business?
Okay, well, this is the tough, I'll tell you the honest truth. Like, 3 years ago, I had never even let a horse in before because I was scared of them.
Sure.
So, for me, honest to goodness, I went to Kentucky 2-3 years ago, and I've learned from the bottom to the top. And it's just all the learning. Like my dad always says to me, you'll never stop learning, Shelley. And I really enjoy that part of it. It's a challenge. I grew up actually in the fishing industry, and I actually, for 16 years, got to travel the world fishing. And so I love the outdoors. I love animals. I love, that was a big thing for me. And then, I stayed at home and raised my son for a few years, and I had to get back out at it. And my dad having all these horses, it was just a real challenge for me to learn. I love learning. And, to help him out and be in this with my dad as he gets older, it's awesome. So the biggest challenge was walking a horse 3 years ago. Now it's, comforting, and I can pull and can, learning all of it now. But it was, they're a big animal, and they're,
yes. Yeah.
They're unpredictable. So, but the mares and baby side of things, I'm really comfortable with.
I love it. So how many brood mares are you guys managing?
We have 13 brood mares in Kentucky right now. And I think we have 8 babies. And 13 are in full for next season. So, hope all goes well, right?
how when it comes to feeding them into, either into the sales side or how much of it, are they a certain percentage kept racing?
Yeah, this year we've definitely got some horses into, we have some honor codes, some 9 shafts, and some orbs. We've bred some really good to some really good sires. My dad, up until last year, had this real big heart to race his babies. One of his dreams is to breed and race a Derby winner or something,
sure,
regional for us. So that's kind of been a passion for him. So I think now that we're kind of breeding to better and we got some really good mares, I think we're going to start to see us starting to sell a few more. And that will be kind of the thing that I would love to do in Kentucky. But when it comes, once he sees those babies, he loves them so much, it'll be hard for him to sell them. I just know how he is.
What was, out of curiosity, I mean, because I know that I don't sense that your father's original business was horses. What was the family business?
He's a customs broker, so he's an import.
Is he really? How about that?
US. Yeah. You know, it's easy for us to get our horses to and from the border because he's got the right company to do the paperwork.
Exactly.
So that comes in hand. But so he's an import export agent.
Isn't that interesting? Because I, you know, my 10 years in Montreal, I was working with Costco, and was bringing products. It started out, I was bringing products in from the United States to Canada, and then ultimately, you know, I represented a lot of Canadian manufacturers. Yeah, sure, and that's why I would come to Vancouver to meet with the Costco in BC. All through the '90s.
Awesome. So you're a Woodbine guy for a while, I assume.
Actually, it's funny. I used to go to Greenwood more. Went to Greenwood a little bit more, but the Blue Bonnets. You know, we living in Montreal, we had the harness, which is long gone. But Saratoga. I mean, that's why. Then eventually, I moved when I had to leave Canada. I came to the Saratoga area, and that which essentially
I haven't been there yet, and I cannot wait. Next summer, I'm coming.
you guys, it sounds like the operation is well on its way to, you know, to making a big splash in North America, and amazing series of performances on Saturday afternoon at Hastings, winning the BC.
Yes, it was
during
good.
The
I was
the
happy
Oaks.
For my dad and the crew did awesome. You know, they were great.
Well, Shelley, I appreciate it. You can follow the Todds, Glenn and Shelley, and good luck today at your sale. Thank you so much. How many are you selling?
I've got 9 for sale here today. So I bought them all in January at the Keeneland sale. And, just trying to get some more head on our track for next season. And, I hope we do well. Yeah, we got some good ones.
Well, best of luck. And then good luck at Keeneland when you come to town.
I will be there. I will be there for the next few months. So if I run into you in that next of the woods, that'd be great, Steve.
I love it. Shelley, well done. Congratulations to you and your father and the whole family. The North American Thoroughbred Horse Company Incorporated. It's the longest name.
Thanks so much for having us.
Not at all.
Thank you.
I love it.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Shelley Todd. Shelley and Glenn Todd, both. How much fun. So there you watch for their name, because I get the sense that they're headed for an American invasion. Sale starts in seconds, and we'll take note and look forward to talking to Sid tomorrow and more. I want to thank the Todds, Glenn and Shelley, and Jessica Martini, Andy Serling as well, of course, and Dick Powell, and Rob Whiteley. If you missed Rob, listen on the archive or tomorrow morning, replay 6 to 9. Here on Sirius XM. Good luck if you're playing today. I'll talk to you tomorrow.